And good morning. It is 2 minutes past 10 o'clock here in the Inland Northwest. I'm Jim Tevenin. And across from me is one of our most frequent guests and most welcome guests here at Spokane Public Radio, Zuhal Bailey. Good morning, Zuhal.
Good morning, Jim. Great to be here again.
It is lovely to have you, and it seems like only yesterday. And in a way, it kind of was, because earlier this month, like about 2.5 weeks ago, you were in here with James Loeb talking about the finale of the Spokane Symphony season and that incredible piece that you played by Michael Dougherty.
What a great way to end the season. We were so excited. And of course, talking to you about it before, really, we could put no words on what happened. It was quite a celebration.
Yeah, it's it kind of goes beyond music. It becomes a phenomenon unto itself.
Agreed. Yeah. And Michael was here as well, which, we didn't realize that we didn't introduce him to the mass audience. So when we led this man on stage after the concerts, people didn't know who he was. They didn't realize the man who created this Tales of Hemingway was actually in the house.
Yeah, the last time he was here was when Tom Hampson was here with the Letters from Lincoln.
That's right.
Back in 1809. No, we weren't here then. Back in 2009, the early days of the Fox. But thinking about that incredible performance with its very aggressive playing techniques, I think maybe aggressive is actually kind of a mild word to use.
I would say physically descriptive. I'm just joking. He really does. Michael Dougherty really does describe exactly what you would probably see visually on the big screen if there were music attached to that as a soundtrack. I mean, it was very cinematic, from the soulfulness of the cello to bombs dropping and war to the running with the bulls to out in the deep ocean. I mean, literally, it's as you saw and people witnessed, it's an incredibly athletic piece that really has no equal in the repertoire.
Appropriately so, because its subject is Ernest Hemingway,
That's
after
correct.
All. Well, it's a good point to ask you the question of, there is that, and I realize this is a standalone piece. It's not going to have any rivals too soon, I don't think, in terms of the demands on the player. But from that, we have what we're going to be talking about this morning, the whole world of chamber music.
Correct.
Is there a muscle in your brain that you have to reposition or repurpose in going between the two? Let's say that, just for fun, that after the last performance, you had been invited across the street to play for a cocktail party.
Right.
And you have, a trio quartet together. What would have to change in terms of your approach to the instrument?
First thing that comes to mind is just the music we play. I think people always ask how I prepare and psychologically wrap my head around pieces. And I say, generally, it just happens because the music evokes all of those things. I could not fathom playing the way I did with the Dougherty in what we just heard with the Mozart. There's no way. And the music guides you, and that's the language of any said composer or piece or whatnot. But I did think a lot while I was playing the Dougherty in the Fox Theater, the large scale orchestral piece, at how, even looking down at my instrument that was made 332 years ago, that instrument had no clue that this was going to be expected of it that long ago, and it's been modified and strengthened over the course of three centuries to be able to project bigger and clearer. But the capacity of the instrument was to play in chamber music, to be a bass element of a string quartet or a trio, the pedals of a piano. Not necessarily a leading voice. And that's how the cello has evolved itself in actually encompassing the entire range of the human voice, which is why it's become the kind of storyteller without words, sonically, of a lot of the greatest composers that have ever been on earth, because it has the full range now with its evolution. But it's hard to talk about the Dougherty because, as you said, it is singular. You have to witness it. You can't even witness it on a recording like it would be in the concert hall live, because you have to see what I'm physically doing.
How did he make that sound?
That's right. Oh, yes.
I see.
He has to twist the cello around or put the bow behind him and these kinds of things, which are very theatrical. And I'm not quite sure that Michael knew that I was going to have to do that, but he was trying to tell the story of running with the bulls and sword fighting and all the things that come. There's the bow in my hand, and I have to maneuver that to make these sounds. Chamber music is to me, every day. Those events, those epic gladiator events that we heard to end the Spokane Symphony season, can't be every day because they're too big.
Mm-hmm.
And so the barrister events with Northwest Bach Fest, Mozart, Reger, Beethoven, Dachnani, J.C. Bach, those are, they're crystalline experiences for both the performers and the audience, because it's up close. You can really see the intricacies, not the grandeur, of why classical music has survived in its highest echelon for so long.
Before we get into the programs for this weekend, first of all, let's play the game, Where in the World is Zuhal Bailey? Which could be, you know, there's possibilities for this. So your people can talk to my people. the Zuhal Bailey app, where we follow you on the map. Now, but in terms of that, and there's an actual objective that I'm trying to get at. Between your performance with the Spokane Symphony and your return to Spokane for the Barrister Concerts, where have you been?
A lot
of places.
Basically, every other day is a different city. And the way modern travel is people think, presenters think, that if my body can get there,
you'll
that
be ready
my mind
to play.
And soul will also be in tow. It'll be there too. You know, people ask me a lot what it's like to be a traveling performer. I think I'm a bad example because I think most of the people that I know have things where they live that occupy a large portion of their time. Everything I do is away from home,
mm-hmm.
and home is also in question because I'm gone so much. So it's not odd to me, but I had to, you know, when you alluded that you're going to ask this question, I actually had to write it down because I don't think about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But since I saw you, I mean, the next morning I flew back to Juneau, Alaska, and played 4 or 5 days of concerts. From there, I went to Vancouver, Washington, and played 3 days of concerts. That's still on the West Coast, though, because it's usually a zigzag that's insane.
Right. I mean, it is different cities, different states.
And Alaska is far away. Right. And then from there, I flew to New York City. And then the next day after New York City, I flew to Boston and was there for a couple of days. And then after that, I flew back to New York City for 2 days, and we're back here. So it's nonstop and, you know, bi-coastal or whatever you call it. And then from here, I go to Sitka and then Albuquerque and so forth and so on. I'm very rarely in a place for more than 5 days, four mm-hmm. days. Very rarely try to get over the jet lag. I just, you know,
just
suffer.
Roll with it.
That's right. I'm used to being kind of feeling like I'm drowning.
Just a stab at the figure, percentage-wise, how much is with orchestra and how much is chamber music?
Okay, that's a great question. I also have to describe the fact that I know the pecking order of opportunity for cellists, pianists, and violinists, et cetera, et cetera. The way it works for those listening is generally when you look at a season of orchestras, you'll see a pianist or two. You will probably always see a violinist. You may not see a cellist during any given season. The cellist gets into the realm of, well, we could also have a violist, and we could have our principal trumpeter. We could have it. It's very repertoire-driven or celebrity-driven or whatnot. It's not that we want to do this every season. I counted the other day because someone asked how many different orchestras I had played with in my career so far. It's well over 200 different orchestras around the world. And those orchestras usually spin me back in the mix every, you know, 2 or 3 years. So it's taken a long time to amass mm-hmm. that number. But I would say in any given season, it's between 12 and 17 different orchestras, any given. That's, and again, those are all weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So But it all depends on what other projects I'm doing and where that is and things like that. But I play about 30 different cello concertos. And I say that because I only play really about 11 in public, because those are the ones. And Doherty has actually fallen into that category now. It's one of the ones I champion a lot. I'm now in a phase where I'm commissioning a lot of new cello concertos to add to the fold to see if they stick. But you know, it's been a steady rise. So now I know what I can do, my capacity, know what pieces do, what we were talking about. When people ask me to play, I generally say, you know, what's the motive here? Is it a season ender? Is it a grand opening? Is it a Brahms event? I like to be part of the creative process, not just play some random piece that may or may not work out.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into what will be on the menu for this weekend. Now, this in the world of music, you're dependent on people being A, available, and B, actually showing up, and not having something happen between the two. You know, the signing and then the appearance. And this is something you've had to do some personnel changes.
Yes. Yeah, well, that these days, especially with visa issues, I mean, you shoot for the stars and sometimes you hit the moon. But we're still, in space in a grand way. I know when I program anything. Well, if you look at the bottom of a program, you'll see always in fine print, artists and repertoire subject to change without notice, because you can't control most things in this world. In this particular case, I had thought to bring this wonderful Greek violinist over to play with my colleague Christian Kohlberg, who's principal violist of the Cincinnati Symphony, and his wonderful flutist wife Amy Taylor, who plays in the symphony as well when the occasion arises. I've had them in different capacities around the United States a lot and worked with them. And they're lovely as people, and I couldn't wait to introduce them to the family here in Spokane. I very rarely bring a solo type or orchestral violist, and a flute is also an instrument that I want to showcase, because the flute was a favorite instrument of a lot of composers in history of composition. And then the Greek violinist alerted me that there was a big visa issue, and it wasn't going to happen. And of course, I called Christian and Amy, and I said, "Okay, here's what we're trying to deal with." And they said, "We just played a lot of this repertoire with your friends, Ilya Finkelstein, and Evan Blomberg." Now, Ilya and I went to school together, as did Christian and I. Ilya and I went to school together at Juilliard, I have actually worked with him subsequently, and he's principal cellist of the Cincinnati Symphony. And his wife, Evan, is in the violin section of the orchestra as well. And they just played the bulk of this repertoire in Cincinnati in a big concert event. And so I said, "Oh my goodness." And then the question was, are they available? Because there was no question marks of their artistry and the capacity of working together. And then I thought it was kind of cool that we'd have two couples again, a family kind of event of sharing, and the dynamic, which is, you know, different than others. And, to bring my friends together again. And they were available. So we changed the repertoire slightly. And I'm going to be joining more than I was in the first iteration. And so what my goal here was is to feature the beauty of all the instruments in the capacity of the great composers. And that the Beethoven string trios is what we're going to start off with tomorrow at Barrister. And, you know, Beethoven, when you think of string trios, I think of virtuosity, because he's trying not to be compared to Haydn. He's trying to showcase three voices that can run beside each other and showcase a complete masterpiece without, again, having a quartet, which changes everything. It becomes a small symphony. So I like the idea of bringing together and showcasing the grandeur of Beethoven with Ilya, Evan, and Christian, introducing three new artists to Spokane, in a piece like that you can really hear the individual voices. And then the Rager piece features Amy Taylor. So it's a trio of four, flute, viola, and cello. And then the second half is the Doc Nani Serenade. So I get to join them. Mm-hmm. And the Doc Nani Serenade is a piece that was made kind of famous by the great virtuosos of the 1900s, Heifetz, Primrose, and Feuermann, and Len Harrell, Pinchas Zukerman, and Itzhak Perlman. This is a piece that is so marvelously celebrated behind the scenes usually. It's very rarely showcased that I couldn't wait to also step on stage and join them for that. So tomorrow night you're going to hear everybody in the ways that kind of introduces them, both as people and as performers.
It's nice. We're going to circle back to the Doc Nani before we're done, but it's an interesting contrast, as you suggest, in describing them with the Beethoven. And then a composer who lots of people don't know. I know him because he wrote a bunch for organ and some pretty forbidding stuff, too.
Yes.
Max Reger, very, very dense German romanticism. But there's something that is charming and utterly captivating about his serenade that we're going to hear on the program.
The Doc Nani.
The Reger.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And again, flute, adding a wind instrument to an ensemble of strings really does like punch holes in the whole soundscape. It flies above, it's like an eagle above of the density. So to hear this in that capacity, Barrister Winery is going to be wonderful. And then we arc, of course, coming back to Doc Nani.
Right. And then let's go to the Sunday concert, and then we can circle back.
Sure.
And before we go any further, I'd be remiss if I didn't. Now, I have to get very hush-hush about this because you're playing today at noon, aren't you?
Oh, yes. I'm going straight from here. Yes.
So, tell us.
Oh, I love being the Pied Piper on a lot of levels. I like things that are sort of planned, not planned, to see the power of music. And they've put me into the atrium at the mall downtown. And at noon, I'll pull my cello out and I'll sit down in a chair in the middle of the atrium and play for a while and just let it go through all the stores and all of the entire building, because it does go through.
It's a pretty amazing space.
It is an amazing space. And I love looking around at the restaurant as it twigs upstairs mm-hmm. while I'm playing. And just, again, one of the things that brings me such joy is to see young people stop their parents because the young people want to hear the music. And the parents, the only reason they are not stopping is because they're in their own heads with stress and anxiety and preoccupation. And the kids stop them, and then they stand there for 15 or 20 minutes and kind of like, what is this? And then this is a cello, and then this is that. And that's the way I like kind of bringing music to people as much as I can. And it's called a pop-up, and it's at the atrium today at the mall downtown.
Yeah, 12 noon.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the second of the programs at the Barrister. And I should say that these are Saturday evening at 7 o'clock and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, the typical
Correct.
Times for these. And the repertoire takes us in a slightly different direction, at least, that there is the Mozart Flute Quartet number one. It's repeated on Sunday, yes. But there's music of Johann Christian Bach, and this is the quartet for flute, violin, viola, and cello.
Yes. So Mozart loved the flute. Mozart didn't write for the cello. It's still beyond me that there was no cellist in his lifetime that inspired Mozart to feature the cello more. But there's, you know, I think that it's kind of universally accepted that Mozart came from the heavens, like literally, like his music. It's so perfect and right. And there's really nothing you can say about it that would be a derogatory. And I wanted to showcase the glory of Mozart, which we had usually only heard, at least in my tenure here, during the summers, Mozart on a summer's eve. I'll never forget, you know, watching those concerts with Vern Wyndham hosting and sitting there looking at the trees and the sky and hearing Mozart, thinking, well, this is the soundtrack to life right here. So I wanted to showcase that again, to kind of allude to music in Manitou this mm-hmm. summer, which we can certainly talk about. But I also wanted to feature the oddity that Bach's sons were actually in many ways more popular and more celebrated than Johann Sebastian Bach himself.
Well, they're more up to date, don't you know?
Well, so, and we are Northwest Bach Fest, so I thought it'd be a really interesting twist to start with the son of Bach, one of the many, J.C. Bach, in one of his ensemble pieces, and for flute and string trio. So that would be, again, that. And then, of course, I wanted to end that show with another Beethoven string trio. This is one that's kind of interesting to me because, you know, very rarely do classical musicians get features at the Grammy Awards, like big features, mm-hmm. like the evening ceremony. It's usually for like Metallica and people like that. And about 25 years ago, Itzhak Perlman, Pekka Zukerman, and Len Harrell got a five-minute feature at in the evening ceremony because they won for the string trios, and they played that. They played the last movement of the Beethoven String Trio, Opus 9, Number 1, and just brought the house down. And I thought, you know what? Let's bring the house down in ways that classical music can do. And that was my program behind that, but also to show, basically, it's a bookend of the two days. We start with one and we end with one in the two concerts, and I'll be joining Evan and Christian Kohlberg on that one as well.
All right, wonderful guests from Cincinnati and Zul Bailey together on these two programs that close this part of the Northwest Bach Fest season. A great year of performances at the Barrister Winery Saturday, this coming Saturday, which is tomorrow, as it turns out, at 7, and then Sunday at 3. Before we circle back to the Dohnányi, which there's a reason for my doing that, give us just a little bit of a hint then about what's going to be happening in Manitou.
Oh, I'm so excited. Please come to this because it really does allude to the future of our organization. We have a very wonderful classical piece that kind of sets the mood of standard beauty, Camille Saint-Saëns's Muse and the Poet. It'll be for violin, cello, and piano. And then we go to the Piazzolla, Astor Piazzolla Seasons for violin and strings, which is tango music. That is the first show of the two-show evening. And then the second half, and please go to YouTube and check this out, Biriba Union, B-I-R-I-B-A Union, is a trio of a Uruguayan electric bass player, Mike Block, who plays the cello standing up and it's strapped to him and he sings and plays and all of that, and a beatboxer.
Okay.
And, yeah, you laugh. And I did too. And I was dragged kicking and screaming to hear this group about 6-8 months ago. And I've rarely would say I'm blown away at this level. 2 hours of this, I did not want them to stop. And I begged them after the show in New York City, which I saw there, to please come recreate this in Spokane in our outdoor venue. So it's going to have a two chaptered event, really classical to start off with, about 15 minutes, and then kind of a tilt towards world music with Astor Piazzolla and tangos, a little intermission for a stage change, and then the volume changes for Biriba Union, beatboxer, strolling cello singer, and electric bass.
It sounds like it will be quite the evening.
Check it out on YouTube, Biriba Union. You're going to, if you see it and take the time to look them up, you will be at that show, and I'll be there too.
All right, very good. Well, Zul, let's circle back to, as promised, the Dohnányi Serenade for String Trio. And you have some contact with this, as a matter of fact, from a recording made back in 2007.
Right.
With a very, very special cast that includes another cellist who's been in this studio and, you know, very close to the end of his life, He played here with the Gonzaga Symphony.
Yes.
And that was Lynn Harrell.
Right. I've been thinking a lot about him lately because he passed in April, 5 years ago. His last concert I was at in El Paso, Texas, sitting there watching and in wonder, not knowing that that would be his last concert. I was very, very lucky to be on the same concert and work with him in this particular CD, and we had it recorded. So the Rensky Quartet for two cellos, so I played with him on that, and then the Dakhnani Serenade for violin, viola, and cello. And I was so taken with the magic and the awe of that concert that I'm, in hindsight, the fact that it's recorded and documented, to hear it in, you know, almost 20 years ago, 18 mm-hmm. years ago, mm-hmm. is a real gift. And so this piece, the piece was programmed, the serenade, because Lynn Harrell was on the concert as well, and I love his recording of it. I wanted him to hear and talk about it. And so that's what that's all about. And of course, the Beethoven string trio that I mentioned at the Grammys, that was him playing as well. But the piece is just, it's a war horse. It's a virtuoso vehicle for all three. It's in a language that is so brilliantly presented. And I would love for people to hear it live, but I'd also love for maybe you to share with your listeners some sounds.
As a matter of fact, we will go out with the theme and variation movement from the Serenade in C by Ernst von Dohnányi. On the recording, we have violinist Georgia Schmidt, the violist Kirsten Johnson, and a cellist by the name of Zul Bailey. Zul, thank you, as always, for sharing your time with us and really taking us some interesting places today.
Appreciate it, Jim. Thank you.
All right. Here we go. Music of Ernst von Dohnányi.